Welcome to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast with Julian Castelli. Each week, we talk with senior tech leaders to explore stories and insights about the challenges involved with growing technology companies. As we uncover really important insights, we are going to capture those through additional episodes that we are calling Trail Markers. This is one of those episodes. A trail marker is a sign or mark that helps ensure that you take the right path to get to your destination. We hope that these episodes will serve as an equally important guide to helping you climb your own growth mountain.
Okay, today we're trying to talk about cap table Vietnam. What the heck does that mean? This is a term that one of my good friends came up with. This was back when, during a difficult time with, we were talking about a startup and we were kind of trapped on all sides. You know, we couldn't get funding from our existing investors. And then we got funding offer from another investor and there was just a conflict and we literally had no good solutions. And I remember him saying, "Oh my God, that sounds like cap table Vietnam." So today, that's what I want to talk about. There's so many ways to get trapped in a situation with no good choices and no good ways to come out, intact. The concept of Vietnam, obviously a famous conflict that, defines, challenges for the U.S. military. And at the end, there was really no good options to get out and they couldn't win. That's how you feel if you're a startup and startup leader, and you're stuck on the financing side. And these days we've just gone through, probably about 18 months of really, really difficult capital markets conditions. And a lot of founders I know these days are going through these kind of cap table Vietnam moments. So what are we talking about? The first thing we're talking about is, their financial situations. That's why we call it cap table. We're trying to talk about like when you're kind of trapped with your cap table and your ability to finance the company, right? There are a lot of different traps, but one I just talked to some company leaders a few weeks ago. They were trying to raise capital and they had the first trap, which is their existing investors were not able to support them. And so they were really struggling, even though they had a really cool company, a really cool idea, and then made some traction. I remember seeing their deck. It was a great deck. The leaders were smart people. And so this is something that maybe 2 years ago probably would have gotten funded pretty quickly. The issue was there was a complication and their lead investor couldn't follow on for whatever reason. And immediately I remember telling the founder, I said, "Look, that's a really difficult thing because, 80% of the people you talk to are going to immediately say, what's going on there?" The people who've been with this business and they know the most about the business, if they're not participating or even if they're not leading, why not? Have they not gotten, they have some inside information that I don't have. And obviously new investors are always looking to see what the current investors are because they have more information. There's an asymmetry of information and they're going to expect that the existing investors know more. And so that's one way to kind of get into that challenge. And this, this poor founder was struggling with that because, he kept hearing over and over again, the same thing. It was tough when new investors are skeptical because the current investors can't participate. And sometimes there are good reasons why they can't. Sometimes there are structural reasons, but quite often the reasons are is that the company isn't performing to the expectations of the original investors. And of course, that's what the new investors are thinking, or at least they're worried about. And so then as the founder, you're kind of trapped. You've got, at least emotional support from your existing investors, but if they're not going to write a check, it's hard for you to go get funding from other people, right? Just because that's psychology. And so that's one way to get trapped into cap table Vietnam. The second is if you raise money at too high of a valuation. And this one makes me think of a great Silicon Valley episode. That show was so funny. But when Richard goes into a bar and meets his friend who he's really jealous of because he had this huge valuation, huge raise at a great valuation. And the poor guy is just, has his head in his hands and he's just so upset. He said, "I never should have taken that round. I never should have taken that money." What he's talking about there is one way to get trapped is if you take money at a high valuation that you can't live up to in the future. Now, of course, that's incredibly tempting, right? Because to some extent, raising money at a high valuation is like winning a gold medal, right? You know, you're signifying to your team, to yourself, to the world that, man, the market values our company at a great valuation. And if you can keep speeding through that valuation and maintain it going forward, that's great. The downside is if you take money at that valuation and then you run into challenges and you can't maintain the growth rate or the metrics that got you there, or you hit a market that just changes in terms of valuations, now you're stuck. And in another version of Cap Table Vietnam, you're stuck now because you're trying to raise money. When you run out of money, you want to raise new money, but if you don't deserve the valuation that you got maybe 2-3 years ago, that is a really big challenge. And again, it's one of those ones where you can spend tons of time and, you know, there are people who have solved it and there are solutions, but it is really hard. Quite often, many companies find that they can't find a solution and they get trapped by their cap table because their cap table is set at a level that was appropriate 2-3 years ago when the company was hitting, you know, potentially different benchmarks and the market was valuing companies differently. And now all of a sudden you're hitting the market and you don't have those. So you're kind of stuck. And the current market doesn't want to provide capital because maybe you're just not hitting the metrics that are required. Your historical investors are stuck because they've marked the investment up higher. And so then this is a problem with their portfolio. And so it's hard for them to initiate what's called a down round. A down round is when you recapitalize the company at lower valuations. When that happens, that triggers all kinds of legal protections and challenges within the document and the cap structure and the board of directors and the governance of the company. And that becomes really, really hard. And so typically, your existing investors are going to be reluctant to do that because, you know, they're kind of breaking their own creation, right? And so they'll often say, hey, well, let's see what the market says. And then the market can come to you with, you know, either just avoid you because the market's changed, or often if they'll come, they may come with some demands that are pretty painful, right? Like a restructuring. And to reset the price, typically you do have to restructure, right? And you have to get existing investors to change a lot of their provisions and other things. So that could lead you as a founder to just feel like you're trapped with no way out and feel, you know, and scream with existential angst, oh my God, this is a cap table Vietnam. Well, anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about, you know, how to avoid that situation, right? And the most important things that I think are to avoid that, number one is financial forecasting going forward, right? A lot of early stage startups, you know, have more of an accounting oriented finance group, and their job is to make sure to track the numbers, to pay the bills, to keep the business running, you know, make sure that the reporting is great. But you also have to have the capabilities to forecast forward and ultimately know when you're going to run out of gas. And have that within at all times, knowing, you know, how much runway do you have left and how much runway with at least three scenarios. Maybe it's your base case, your upside case, and your downside case. That's your fuel gauge, and you have to keep that front and center. And you have to have a finance leader who, if when you get close, like within 9 months and we don't have any options, that you have to have someone who's going to see that and is going to stand on your desk until you pay attention so that no one is ever surprised. Okay. So first thing is knowing when you're going to run out of gas under all circumstances and have someone just owning that criteria, that number, that month, so that your whole team knows and your board knows, and you're always planning ahead. Okay. So once you know when it is, hopefully it's a couple of years in the future, right? Second thing is you have to know what's required to be able to, you know, reasonably expect funding when you get there. So if 2 years from now, you know, you're going to run out of capital and you're at a stage where you're a Series A company, you say, okay, well, what do I have to be to be a Series B company. And that involves really understanding what the best practices in the market are today and what you expect them to be in 2 years for Series B companies, right? And that involves talking to investors, doing research, having people on your board and your team that know these things. And it's changing, right? So you have to be up to speed on market dynamics and market metrics, but understanding what it takes to get a Series B in this case that we're talking about means that's your speedometer, right? And if you're not there right now in terms of the metrics, let's say it's growth rate, right? If you have to be growing at 50% or 40% or 60% and you're growing at 20%, now you know you have maybe 2 years, but you're also not going fast enough. So you now have to say, okay, I've got 2 years to get myself up to, let's just say, 40% growth in order to feel like I've got a chance to be able to refuel when we get there, right? And so knowing when and knowing what. Number two is the what. I call this the speedometer, how fast you have to be going in order to be able to reasonably expect that a lot of people will say, yeah, I'd like to invest in this business, give you more money, right? The third thing, you have to know the who. Okay, so we said when, what, and who. The who, are the likely investors that are going to be wanting to find companies of your type. Okay, so in our example, we're talking about a Series B company. If you're a SaaS company, and a lot of our listeners are, okay, Series B SaaS, that's fairly easy. There's a ton of Series B SaaS investors. Right, but understanding your industry, your focus, what type of company are you? Are you a fintech company? Are you a vertical SaaS company? There's a lot of different varieties, and there's a lot of different funds that focus on those things. So, if you have 2 years, spend the time to really understand what type of company you are. How are you going to be viewed by the audience you're going to be talking to, and then try to find as many investors that want the type of company that you have and that you're building, and start building relationships with them. Reach out to them on LinkedIn, look for meetings when you're in town, look through the mutual connections across your board and your ecosystem of advisors and friends and investors who can make introductions, right? Don't show up 3 months before you're out of cash saying, hey, I really want to talk to you about this. It's a good rule of thumb to just, if you're a CEO, allocate at least 20% of your mind share of just thinking about these things in terms of making those relationships. Because ultimately, if you can build a relationship in advance and keep people up to speed, there's a much higher chance that when you actually need the money, you have a chance to actually get it. Okay, so that's the who. And then the how, it's a little bit of how as well, right? So the how is cultivating those relationships in advance. And then, the other thing is have your story ready, right? I always talk to CEOs and founders, and I say, where's your fundraising deck? And sometimes I get the answer of, oh, we don't have one. We haven't raised money in a couple of years. And I'm always astounded. I'm like, you always have to have a fundraising deck ready to go. Have your deck ready to go and keep updating it, right? And the point that I just made up there, yeah, sure. If your old fundraising deck is a Series A deck, of course, that's out of date. And that's not the deck I'm talking about. But, work with your team and write the Series B deck now. Okay, you look at the scorecard, get the scorecard of what a best practice Series B company needs to look at and populate those pages now, and then see what the gap is between where you are and where you need to be, right? That's what we talked about, the speedometer. And so, fill out the pages, and maybe you have three quarters of it done, and maybe there's a couple pages that you haven't hit those milestones yet. But that's going to help you strategically, because you're thinking about what's critical we do over the next 2 years. Well, some of those gaps are going to be in your deck. Okay. So work on that fundraising deck, even if it's a shell, share it with people you trust, really go through it. So that by the time you're actually sharing it with somebody, 18, 12, 9 months before you run out of gas, you've been through it. You know it like the back of your hand. You've gotten feedback, and it's that much better because of that. And you're much more comfortable presenting it. So make sure you have that ready to go. Okay, so those are all things that that's the when, who, what, why of making sure that when you do run out of gas, or well before you run out of gas, you can fill up with fresh capital. That's obviously the best option. That's the goal. That's the best practice. The last one is the difficult one, and that's when you're stuck. If for any reason you weren't able to do those things and you aren't able to raise capital, have your emergency plan ready to go. Okay. Have your options thought through. Now, you know, if you can't raise capital, obviously the options are often around how much can you cut expenses? What kind of emergency actions can you take to keep the business going and preserve the value that you've built, right? So there's always options. They're just sometimes they're not that attractive, right? But again, if you're trying to figure this out under duress with 30, 60, 90 days of cash left, I mean, that's just as bad as it gets. It's the hardest thing in the world. So, you know, I would really encourage you to always be thinking about what are your, you know, what's your break glass in case of emergency plan. Make sure you have that. If you have a CFO or whoever your finance lead is, ask them to kind of create that for you. Now, it's not pleasant, but it's a lot less unpleasant if you go through it in advance and think through it. Now, one of the things about a SaaS business, if you're a SaaS company, you know, the valuations of SaaS companies are very healthy historically, even ups and down, they tend to be a premium to other kinds of businesses. One of the reasons that's the case is because of the nature of the business model, right? SaaS has recurring revenue. So the idea is that you've got, you know, recurring high margin revenue that should keep going if you have a good product. And so unlike a business that has to go sell every year to maintain its revenue, and you know, you might be 25% of last year or 50, 75, it takes a lot of work to just match last year. The idea of a great SaaS business is you should have recurring revenue, and hopefully you're doing great things for your customers. They want to expand. You know, sometimes you have even growing revenue with your existing base. That's called net revenue retention. So, you know, there's the idea that you should be able to keep going with your revenue fairly steady for a period of time without necessarily 100% of your cost base, right? If you're a high margin, you know, good NRR SaaS business, that means, let's say you're an 80% margin business, that means that there's 80% of your costs that, you know, technically you may not need to keep going, right? And so not suggesting you cut 80% of your costs, although there are companies that have done that, but you should have a lot more room. Let's just say you're able to cut your expenses by 30% or 40%, and that can get you to break even. You know, the fact that you have an 8% margin means that 20% of your costs are absolutely required to service the customer and keep them going. Obviously, there's a bunch of other costs that are required to keep your product going and to provide good service to your customers. But you know, theoretically, it could be up to an 80% cost reduction. And, you know, you still should have that revenue and the costs associated with that revenue going forward. Now, it's not always, it's not easy to get to 80%, and that wouldn't be the recommendation. But the point of the math is to show that SaaS companies typically have a lot more room to reduce costs and maintain steady revenues than others. And so that dynamic is one that you really need to work on when you think about your emergency plan. You know, how much can you cut to get to profitability and or positive cash flow? And the reason you would do that and go so aggressively is because if the capital markets aren't open, or you find yourself in a situation where you just can't get funded, you have to manage what you can control. And that last thing you control is the costs. So, you know, let me tell you, if you have a plan where, you know, you and your CFO or your director of finance say, hey, look, you know, we need to get funded in 2 years, but gosh, by the time we're there, if for any reason we can't, you know, we can maybe cut 20, 30, 25% of our expenses, and then we'd be break even. You're going to be able to sleep a lot better knowing that you at least have one option that's under your control than if you say, man, it's all or bust. We have to raise capital, or we just can't make it where we haven't thought about a way to do it. It's hard to do those things under duress. And if you have your plan in advance, at least you're going to have those options on the table. You have more confidence when you're speaking to investors. And you'll know you have options to maintain the company moving forward and the value you're trying to create for you, your company, your employees, and your investors. So I hope that's helpful. You know, how to avoid a cap table Vietnam. I hope you're not in that situation, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Growth Elevated Leadership Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you please follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast player? And we'd be grateful if you recommend it to a friend. If you'd like more resources on how to become a better leader in business, we invite you to visit us at growthelevated.com. We'll be back next week with more insight from another great tech leader. Thank you.